Hey, this is Paul Paluso from Officer.com, and I'm joined by Ron Clark, the chairman of the board of directors of the Badge of Life. Recently released its 2012 edition of the National Study of Police Suicides. Hi, Ron. How are you doing today?
Fine. I'm doing fine.
Great. Well, can you provide us some information about the group Badge of Life and how this study came about?
Badge of Life came into existence in 2000, the beginning of 2007. It was actually founded by a guy called Andy O'Hara, who was a retired California Highway Patrolman, who himself had severe PTSD. This is all common knowledge. He speaks at groups, et cetera, who was suicidal. And he started to got it into existence. We ended up with a board of directors. We have seven on our board of directors, of which the majority are police officers, and most everybody has some form of PTSD. We started to look very closely at the aspect of suicides because we had heard so many different discussions about how many there were in law enforcement, anywhere from 400 to 800 to whatever. So we started, we started off with education, and I can get into that later on, some of the things officers can do, what should be done. But what we ended up doing is with John Valenti. Dr. Valenti is a well-known police suicide person who's probably one of the best known in the country. And we started the numbers didn't add up. People were going around making comments about how many, and the focus in law enforcement was right on suicides, and we took a different spin on it. Ours has always been on the focus of mental wellness.
Okay.
Which is really a radical change in, and I was in law enforcement. I was a state cop in Connecticut for 23 years.
Yeah.
And almost half of my career was with dealing with officers in Connecticut and elsewhere who ended up with really difficult problems, et cetera. And as we started to talk about law enforcement, and we said, geez, maybe we look for studies. We looked everywhere,
okay.
And we couldn't find one, which kind of surprised us. There were small studies in very small departments, so we took on this aspect of doing a national study for the United States, and we went through our first one. And came up with a figure in 2008 of 141. This was all calibrated with all types of statistical aspects so that the numbers are fairly accurate.
Okay.
In 2009, we did a second one. This one we didn't publish. We did everything the same way, same people, same everything. Came at 143. The third one in 2012... we came up with 126, a fairly significant change. We're still in the process. It's going to take us several months to complete the report, to publish it out. But what it gave us a 17-number decrease, but it took our suicide rate per 100,000 from about 17 down to 14.7. Pretty significant change, and as we've looked at this very closely, as we've said, what's going on here? What's happened? And we're still tabulating data to try. We did something. I don't think anybody has. This is the only study we know of. These three studies that's ever been done in the entire world, not just in the United States. Anywhere. No one's ever done it. And which is, you remember, we're a small group with no budget hardly at all, and we undertake this massive undertaking in law enforcement. And so we're looking now, and one of the things, and these are all preliminary, and please take it until we come up with actual, somewhere around April or so,
okay.
That one of the things we know and we've put it out publicly, our first study, the average age for, mean average for the officer that committed suicide was 38. This study, it's 42. The amount of time on the job was 12 years. Now it's 16 years, which probably represents to us a demographic shift. As younger officers come into law enforcement with possibly less bias towards mental illness, as they begin to look at the peer support programs around the country. I was a peer support way back in the early 70s, right in the cutting edge for law enforcement. We're seeing more and more peer support programs all over the place.
Yeah.
We also think that there's a beginning of the reduction mental illness in law enforcement, as is in society. There's a stigma like you wouldn't believe. Everybody knows it. Every cop knows it. But we also are beginning to, we think, see some reductions in that this isn't a bad thing to worry about your own mental health. Makes a lot of sense. We also started from day one, and we were heretics at that time, indicating that every officer should go for an annual mental health check, finding an outside mental health practitioner that, in fact, he or she could talk to about the events of the year. We call them the critical incidences, the accumulative critical incidences. And lo and behold, we're beginning to see officers that are doing that. We have a fairly extensive network around the United States. We talk to a lot of people. And we're starting to see slowly the beginning awareness. Remember, Paul, that PTSD it has been around. The DSM, the psychiatric manual for diagnoses for PTSD in 1980, 33 years ago, came out. I dealt with officers prior to that. We didn't even know what we were dealing with. And 33 years later, we're still talking about the deadly aspect of PTSD. It's now fairly common to hear about officers that have PTSD.
Yeah.
Our suicide rate in law enforcement is almost scandalous that more officers commit suicide than are killed feloniously with a gun, a knife, etc. Almost two times as many. And we're beginning now to realize that, you know, you really have to, and law enforcement has to really take this stuff serious. It wasn't too long ago you just about get laughed out of a room.
Do you think that's changed? I know.
I think I've been around law enforcement now for 50 years. I started off in the military, and then came into civilian life. I've been around it. I know the culture at the federal level, state level, and local level. And we see the beginnings of individuals inside law enforcement and external that agree with what we're saying, that there's a better way to deal with what's occurring. But I think the real thing that we came up with was that the tip of the iceberg was the suicides. And if you look at it statistically, if you use a base of 850,000 officers, it's about 0.001%. That's tiny. It's not even a blurb on the screen. It's for the people that loved ones that are affected. It's important. But the other thing that nobody likes to talk about, we estimate, Dr. Valente estimates that between 15 and 18% of all officers carry some forms of symptoms of PTSD. It's about 135,000 officers that are out there active duty.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, not a negative. We have been the thorn in the side of law enforcement to say you can't continue to ignore the mental wellness of your officers. And don't tell me about this weakness, because we hear it all the time. Well, it's a weak person, committed suicide, he should have never been in law enforcement, etc. We have a lot of Medal of Valor winners that committed suicide, and if anybody ever took the time and volition, you'd find out the incidences they were involved in directly attributed, diagnosed, PTSD, dead. They did everything. And so we say that it will take a good, hard look to look at law enforcement closely and say, you are sending men and women into harm's way every day. If you look at it statistically, it's far more dangerous psychologically than physically. That bears out. That just bears out. But the real question, and the question law enforcement is going to wrestle with for the rest of the century, is what are you doing? What's your training programs at the academies? What's your training programs for in service? How are you putting them together? You know, we say very simply, entering person, no one should graduate from the academy in this field. It's extraordinarily dangerous psychologically without a proper training program, probably taught by a peer support officer and a mental health specialist, and giving the officers, the future officers, the abilities to listen to the different ways. The old ways now, suck it up, you got to be tough, etc. Sounds good, but it doesn't seem to work all that well. And that's not casting dispersion on the officers, period. It simply says we cannot continue the way we're going and not to make some changes, and not try different things. We've not found the mental health therapists. We haven't found one that disagreed with us. Our problem is sensitizing the officers that there truly are good men and women out there who are independent, keyword, from departments, who in fact spend their whole lives helping people. And we have officers that are starting to do that. Pick up the phone, go talk to somebody. You're not crazy, you're not nuts, you're not anything. You're simply helping yourself. So it's an individual thing. Law enforcement is very paternalistic, very, until you have a mental illness. And if you ever want to talk to some of the folks out there that have ended up with PTSD, et cetera, you find out you're an orphan, and you're cast aside in many cases. So I think our report, when we finally put out our what we would recommend, is going to cause a lot of discussion. It's going to cause, could be controversial even. But we can't see it any other way. There's roughly 650 academies in the United States. We're not talking about a one-hour stress reduction program. We're talking about an actual competent type of program that really gets the future officers to listen to the new ways of how you can take care of yourself. And that's where we're at right now.
Okay.
So, I talk to all types of people, Paul. And I have an unusual background. I was a clinician at one time, had my master's in counseling, and I'm an RN. So I have a good understanding of the physiological aspect of the body and the mental side. And it is just now, we're finding out so much more about this beast called PTSD. We're finding out how deadly it is. All you have to do is look at the Army. Look at the They just reported out the suicide rate for the military. And I don't think anybody can call those people weak. And their numbers are off the chart now.
Well, yeah, and that, socially, do you think it's become more of an issue? I know, you know, with the military over the years, it's more in the social consciousness. And after incidents such as the Newtown school massacre from December, mm-hmm. right after it happened, you heard people actually saying now, you know, what are the officers going through? You know, how is this being handled? And post-incident debriefings, do you think that's more prevalent now than it used to be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I helped start the first program here in Connecticut. I live 7 miles from Newtown. I have friends in Newtown. There's no question, you know, when you see something like that, that's a biggie. That's unimaginable. But we see now the whole aspect of peer support for officers, you know, actual peers that aren't trained counselors, none of that. They're simply peers that have some training, can help an officer sometimes who might not be sure what he really needs to do, or she. Debriefings now are fairly common, but they're not psychotherapy. They're simply go to a debriefing, whatever. So there is a great deal, and the real question now is how do you handle many of the individuals? How do you handle them? What's available? Who has training in the area of, say, traumas that can help a person work their way through? It's safe to say that officers see unimaginable horror throughout their career. Fatal accidents, decapitated children, you know, hangings of young teenage individuals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The real danger, Paul, from our perspective, is the accumulative traumas. Over the course of 20, 30 years, an officer can have 200, 300, 400 critical incidences. And, you know, you say you're carrying a lot of baggage. You've seen a lot. And the old axiom that, well, you knew you were going to come in, you know what to expect. No. No, as a human being, you really are subject, especially if you're the officer right there. And it's the eye of the beholder. What affects me may not affect you. So the good thing is that there is an awareness that what could we do? You know, we have EAPs, we have external EAPs, we have suicide prevention programs, we have a lot of things in place, and working in concert with you, hopefully in the future, with the officer having awareness, I'm a firm believer that officers have to be responsible for themselves. They have to. You can ask them, but no officer homesick in bed with the flu or something. The chief's not coming to your house to feed you chicken soup. Come on, get serious. Come to your wife, whatever, husband. They have to take responsibility, and somebody has to talk, just like, you know, physical fitness, losing weight, all those types of things. It's an individual. Sometimes the officer will need more assistance, more help, depending on what they've gone through, et cetera. But, Paul, the good thing is we're beginning to see, and I think these common figures here are beginning to say that, and this is not negative. This is the hard part for me now. It's not negative. Many people, even in my generation, came into law enforcement, went through, told the same thing, suck it up, handle it, et cetera. I worked for cops with 15 years active duty, all types of cops. I saw every imaginable thing you could see what officers went through. And so, you know, a rare peek into personal lives, et cetera. And getting the proper assistance, the proper help, the proper support, what we're really going to need in law enforcement, and we're beginning to see it. Our leaders in law enforcement at the chief's level that recognize how important this is, that this is not just something to laugh at, and changing the culture. The sea change in law enforcement is occurring. It's occurring. That 20 years ago, debriefings, you wouldn't have seen a cop. You wouldn't have seen a cop at it. They wouldn't have been there. You would have seen EMS, you would have seen the fire, but no cop. Now you're seeing them all the time. So we're seeing slowly, we're seeing officers start to say, okay, I see parts of this, but it's a personal thing. You know what I'm saying? It's a personal. If you ask everybody in a big classroom, you know, they're not going to jump up and say, hey, I saw a therapist. They're not going to do that. But what they do on their own private world for themselves is their private business. And that's what we've always said. And use the people. And if you got a toothache, you go to a dentist. If you got chest pain, well, you go see somebody. Better you're not around anymore. And it just makes sense, but we have to do a better educating job with our officers. And we're in the process. And we've done that. I mean, we have a website that's so extensive it takes you about 3 or 4 hours to go through it.
Yeah.
And we get, quite frankly, Paul, I'm close to 70 years old. And I'm still enthusiastic. I'm still out there. I'm still talking to cops from all over the country every day. They come in, they look at our site, they want something, this, that, whatever, and we get it out to them, or we talk to them, or whatever, but we know there's something happening out there. That's the one thing we know. And it's sad. From my perspective, it's sad when you listen to somebody with severe PTSD trying to read the things that we've just put on the web, common sense things. Where was this stuff 20 years ago? Where was it 30 years ago? How come nobody ever did this? And that's our question. You know, I mean, we're just this little tiny group, and you know, we've got a lot of friends. We have lots of networks out there, so we kind of know, you know, things that are happening, and it's encouraging. It was, there was a time when it was very dark.
But yeah, in the response that you guys, like you said, you've talked to people that get to the website, does it seem like there is more, that more people asking questions and more involvement than there was in the past?
I think, Paul, one of the encouraging things that we see, and not only see, but we also hear, is that many... We get a lot of contacts. It's always in departments. It's always somewhere around the sergeant range, maybe lieutenant. They want more information. How do I start a peer support program? Tell me more about these mental health checks. Have you got any literature on? Have you got a lesson plan? Could you send me? We've done 18 short films. On different subjects, depression, a whole bunch of stuff. They use those for training now. We call them the attention getters. You're probably going to find this hard to believe, but police officers can be a hard audience to deal with, having taught them for most of my life. But they're also very smart people. And they know that some of this stuff is something they can put on their tool belt, something they can use, something that possibly go to any of the departments with functioning peer support. You'll find that they're used, they're contacted, officers talk to them. I think they do immense help getting officers, especially officers. I hate to put it this way, but maybe a little bit older, different generation, haven't been exposed as much as the younger officers, to help get where they need to go. And, you know, whether it be calling somebody to get in, I got this, that, whatever. And that's encouraging. And when we've seen in the last couple of years, we've started to see that. And we still have our suicide prevention programs. We still have our functioning EAPs. We still have tens of thousands of therapists out in the field, out there that are in any phone book, etc., that are only a call away. These are the resources, and trying to say to the officer, I once talked to a chief of police. There was a comment made that the officer that committed suicide was weak, that he shouldn't have been on the department. He had 25 years on the department, he had the Medal of Valor, and he died of PTSD. And you say, we almost eat our own. We don't pay attention to a subject that is overwhelmingly important to law enforcement. And so we do have officers out there with symptoms. Everybody knows that. That's not a secret. Yeah. That's not a secret. The secret is how do you start to offer assist in peer support now? Back to peer support. They start to get out there, and they've been immensely helpful. You can talk. The Pennsylvania State Police has a member assistance program. Now, they're a tough outfit out there. 5,000, almost, I think it's 5,000 troopers. They've got an extensive peer support program here in the state police. The program I ran, Troy Donahue's a sergeant. They run a marvelous program. 120 troopers, peer support officers, and 1,100 troopers. So I'm just using those because they come right off my head. But they're out there, and there's more popping up. I mean, I'm encouraged when a young officer calls, can we talk type thing. tell me how to get started. And anybody who's been around law enforcement, when you're a patrolman, a grunt out there, and trying to talk to captains and majors and the chief. But we have people that have actually got programs started. It's slow, careful. They've started to use materials that we've provided to them. They've used a lot of our films as icebreakers. We have probably our most popular one right now is the Piper film. I don't know if you're familiar, but we took it as our responsibility to have a wall on our website for officers that never got a chance to be on the National Police Memorial Wall. And we have all types of names on there. We have all types of active and retired people that have bared witness that, PTSD can cause suicides. The scandal in law enforcement is that not one department has ever said that even remotely the job has caused the officer to commit suicide. That's the scandal in law enforcement. And there's enough examples of heroic officers out there who have died to fill a book. We know of 14 right now with Medal of Valor. So this is the part that law enforcement will wrestle with for the rest of this century. You talk to any responsible, honorable person, and you say, you're telling me in this day and age, the 21st century, that some of these officers, not all of them, we say about 20%, 20 to 30% can't go on the National Memorial Wall because in 1980, there was a stipulation, no suicides on the wall. Before we knew there was even such a thing as PTSD. That's the scandal. This is going to be around for a long time, and the parity in mental illness with physical injury, et cetera, it'll be here, and it's going to be a discussion. It probably won't happen in my lifetime, but it will. It'll happen. it has to happen. Law enforcement has to start recognizing that without proper support, without a chief of police standing up and saying, look, this is the things you need to do because this is what I did for myself, and you need to do. Lead by example, not by innuendo, not by playing pseudo psychiatrist, and lay it out there and let the officers, you know, they make responsible decisions, but do it in a way that they can understand. And we're beginning to see that's what makes, from our perspective, a better way. Now, a lot of cops will disagree with it, but you haven't walked in my shoes. You haven't seen what I've seen, and not seen what, with some help, what can be done. And that will be the discussion.
Yeah, so, well, sorry about that.
I was saying,
it's very impressive what you guys have been able to do. Like you said, there's not a lot or any research out there on police suicides, studies that have been done, and you guys really have helped contribute quite a bit here.
It took this year alone. We use the same people. The first study took 100-some thousand hours. This one this year took almost 50,000 hours of time. So our thing is, we're pretty direct. We don't make any bones about it, that if you disagree with our study, show me your study, and if you haven't done it, then do it. Because we'll wait for it. And you know, it's searching, looking. Remember, law enforcement, is parts of it like not to talk about suicide, and they like to just keep them low-key. We got very good at searching out. Andy O'Hara, the founder, is probably the best detective I've ever met. And we get a lot of snitches out in the field that tell us what's happened out there. And so we think our figures are fairly accurate.
Okay.
If we can do this, Andy O'Hara presented to the IACP, International Chiefs of Police, in September in California.
Okay.
A whole section on this here. And he was well received, courteous, the whole bit. He laid it out. It's a different approach. But it also is an approach that puts responsibility on the departments and puts responsibility on the officers, and tries to guide, help, we see the leaders inside law enforcement as the peer support people. They have a feel for it. You know, they can take the oh, you're one of them. You're one of those soft guys. You know, they can take that. And most peer support officers are pretty tough people. They're nobody to screw around with, but they have a feel for it. And they're able to, you know, you teach them active listening and all that stuff, but they're very effective with officers that are reluctant to make a phone call, to call somebody for an appointment. And you say, okay. And so, and Paul, we're seeing cracks in the wall, and we're seeing higher level acknowledgement in departments that yes, this is the future, and it will be for law enforcement and the leadership to not some study where you do the study and then you put it up on the shelf and you go on addressing. I hope someday we'll see a national conference on what we're talking about somewhere in this country where we'll talk and gather all the players, you know, peer support, suicide intervention, therapy, the whole thing in one room and talk and law enforcement leadership and talk about. You don't have to spend a lot of money, but you really have to have an idea and a belief, and do it. So that's my whole thing right now. I'll make sure that you get a copy of our report when it's done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think we all.
You can, like I said, it, these are just, they're preliminary right now, and it'll be more detailed. And probably the big thing is we're going to combine all three of them and come up with recommendations.
Okay. Well, when can we expect the
I would estimate, I've talked to both Dr. Valenti and John O'Hara. I would say, and Andy said, probably no sooner than April.
Okay.
Because it's pretty, they're going to cross everything and put it into language that's understandable so that you can see trends, but also to the recommendations. What would we recommend, and what would be the approach? Because that's what we need. We need a global approach. And remember, Paul, we talked to departments as small as three members and as big as lots of thousands. And they all have, similar things. They all have different things going on. They all have officers that, quote, need some form of assistance or help or support or whatever it may be. We tried to pick out, and this one was, critical. I always talk about the critical instances. One of the notorious one is fatal accidents. Somebody's killed. Well, we know that there's over 40,000 fatal accidents in the United States annually. I didn't dream up the number. The federal DOT.
Yeah.
That's about every 15 minutes. And 99.999% of those fatal accidents have a police officer on scene. So that every 15 minutes, somewhere in the United States, a police officer, EMS, other, are going to something where someone's been killed. And, some of them are routine, which is never. Some of them have children. Some of them have everything. And you just say to yourself, in the course of, of a day, a week, a month, how many different calls does a cop go to? Teenage hangs himself. Somebody, accidentally gets killed in a tractor accident, whatever. And yet you're the one there having to do the investigation, photograph, the whole bit. And as much as we'd like to say you're trained to suck it up, if you're a human being, you're affected. You're affected. Some better, some worse. PTSD is a strange, strange beast. But we do know it's deadly. So I hope that was helpful.
Yes, yeah, that definitely helpful. I think there's a lot to learn from what you guys are doing, and like you said, there has been progress made, but there's still a lot to make.
Oh, there. I think that's a key point. The progress in the beginning it was zero. The progress in the last 2 years has been, from our perspective, astounding. Law enforcement goes at a glacial speed. It doesn't change easily. Anybody that remembers carrying the six shooter versus the automatic when we started bringing automatics into departments, knows that it takes time to get people. Now you can't find a department that the officers don't carry automatics.
Yeah.
But it's a slow process, I think a positive, but your last comment, there is a great deal of work to do, and we need law enforcement leaders that recognize this year the IACP had suicides as one of their top priorities. We hope they will continue that and carry that into the mental wellness of the officer. Because that is the issue. It's not about suicides. It's about the mental wellness of the officers. And that's the part that we focused on, and hopefully it seems like it's working. So, anyways, Paul.
I thank you for joining me today, Ron. And, keep up the good work your group's doing, and can't wait to be able to see the finished study, and hope